This whole story that we're in is about apprenticeship, it's about discipleship, it's about this idea that has caught our hearts, all of our hearts, that was so beautifully and powerfully symbolised by the baptism of two young babies, young children. This idea that we don't belong to ourselves, we belong to someone else. We are followers of a master who we perceive, who we think of as greater than us, whose wisdom exceeds ours, and whose way of life is so attractive to us that we are compelled or drawn in, and we just long to be like him. So we have this idea of being with Jesus, which is a few weeks ago we talked about prayer, and that's one of the ways, and of course there are many ways of being with Jesus. Just being here this morning is perhaps an intentional way of being with Jesus, so that we're with Jesus, so that we become like Jesus. And then the Trinity finishes with doing what Jesus did. Wouldn't that be amazing? I just let that ripple out. So wouldn't that be amazing if we were the kind of people who routinely organised our lives from Monday to Sunday to be with Jesus, to become like Jesus, and then routinely and ordinarily in our ordinary lives, in the context that we find ourselves, whether that's a school or whether that's in an old people's home, wherever we are, that we did the things that Jesus did. It's my longing for my life, my one life. How many lives have you got? I've just got my one life and I want to live it in this way. And you can have this for your family if you want it. You know, you might want to say, what's our family about? Well, our family is about being with Jesus, becoming like Jesus, and doing the things that Jesus did. That's what our family is about. It's what our church is about. Being with Jesus, becoming like Jesus, and doing things. It's what my life is about. You can maybe write your own mission statement. What's my life about? It's about being with Jesus, becoming like him, and doing things that he did. If that was your mission statement in your family, how would you display that so that everyone knew? Where would you put it? How would you demonstrate that in your life? What symbols would you use to reinforce that message? What patterns of living would you do? What things would you do first thing in the morning and last thing at night? What would you do in a weekly rhythm in order to be with Jesus, become like him, and do the things that Jesus did? We are touching today the pinnacle of Jesus' teaching. Matthew 5, you know the story. You know the story. Jesus does this teaching on the Mount, Sermon on the Mount. And he does this teaching, but it kind of comes to a crescendo point, I would say. This is perhaps of all the teaching that Jesus ever taught, this is perhaps the one that stands high, head and shoulders above all the other teachings. It's the one that no one would have made up. We know the idea of loving others. We know that sounds familiar. But this idea of loving your enemy, well, this is a pinnacle of ethics, of ideas, of a way of living. This is such an amazing pinnacle of. And of course, we recognize that this was the story of his life. This was the pinnacle of his life, wasn't it? This is where his life ended, the love of enemies. Was when his life finished. So Jesus finishes. He says, this is the end of my sermon. This is what I want you to hear. You have heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. I wonder where he heard that. Maybe he heard that from amongst his friends or the group of people around him. People who are being oppressed by enemy forces. It's one thing to love your neighbor, but another thing to love the enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies. Agape your enemies. And pray for those who persecute you, so that you might be like your Father in heaven, like like children of your Father in heaven. This was new teaching. No one had said this before. No one has really said it. Again, in fact, all of our greatest heroes, the ones that looked like this, they looked like Jesus. They sound like him, and they become heroes in our culture. And we name streets after them. We have special days, and we kind of celebrate their lives. Because this teaching seems to go higher and further than any other teaching. And where did Jesus get it from? He lived in a world drenched with the reality of God. I don't know when he started mulling on this, but maybe he was out one day and the rain was falling. He thought, this isn't fair. This good rain falls on everyone, good and bad. Or maybe he was out in the sunshine and he said, this isn't fair. This sun is falling on all of us, the good and the bad. This is the merciful love of God. The rain falls on the righteous and the unrighteous. It really doesn't matter. Do you know, everyone say agape? Thank you very much. Thank you for getting there so quickly. Agape is a different kind of love. How often do you love pizza? Yeah, that's not agape. Okay. Yeah, that's just the kind of desire and attraction to. How often do you love your wife? Okay, a few. Yeah, well done. Well done. Yeah. Yeah. Well done for not checking if he put his hand up. In a way, that's not agape either. And see, we love things that we're attracted to. That's natural, isn't it? To love the things that kind of taste good, smell good, look good. This thing, that's natural. To love those things, to be desirous of those things, that's not agape. Agape is the other way around. Love, agape love is an emptying love. It's a self-giving love. It's not about what can I get from the situation. It's what can I give to the situation? Agape love is a different kind of love. It's a transforming love. And it's the love which doesn't judge whether their people are good or bad. It just gives stuff away. It gives stuff away. It's not about getting. It's about giving. It's not a feeling. It's not a feeling. He said, love your enemies. He didn't say desire them or feel nice about them. He said, empty yourself. Give yourself away to them in some way. Bless them. Seek their good. They're still your enemies. They're still irritating. They're still hard to live with. They're still a bully. They're still enemies. They're still against you. But give yourself away to them. Even them. He said this, he said, pray for them. And in another place, he says, bless them. Bless those who persecute them. Which is what a loving prayer would be, wouldn't it? This is what we do with our children, isn't it? We get them in our arms, right from a very young age, and we pray a blessing over them. Bless Lord, would you? And we empty ourselves on them. We ask God to empty himself. We want him to pour out his love. Well, what would it be like to hold your enemy before God and say, God, would you bless them? Would you pour out your love on them? I don't know if you notice there's a ladder here. You see, I think we hear the words of Jesus. Those are the most powerful words, and they're the words that Jesus will always be remembered for. Love your enemies. And it was what his life is remembered for, which is why we mark ourselves with the sign of the cross. It's the love of enemies, isn't it? It's not just the love of friends, it's the love of enemies. It's going out and emptying yourself. So Jesus had everything. I might sit down for a moment. He had everything. All power and dominion was his. And yet he didn't consider equality with God something to be grasped. But instead, he emptied himself. This is agape, isn't it? This is the story of Jesus. And the thing is that we have stuff, don't you? I don't know, how are you doing on the ladder of life?
How high have you got? Who have you tried on to get there? How are you doing? How high have you got? I'm as fast as I'm going. I can't go any higher. Well, that's okay, but agape is about giving ourselves away, isn't it? So wherever we got to on the land of life, Jesus says, would you give yourself away for others? Would you come off your position of authority? Would you love your neighbour as yourself? But he doesn't just say that. He says, would you love your enemies? Would you give yourself away to your enemies? And we hear these words, and they're like water for ducks back, because we hear them, but we never apply them to our lives. When the train is late, they're not the worst kind of enemies, are they? The people who run trains. Well, they are the worst kind of enemies, aren't they? And what happens when there's a problem? We moan and groan about them. I don't know, have you ever prayed a blessing on those who run trains? Probably not, because we don't take these words seriously. If there's a bully in the classroom, we sit as far away as possible from them. We don't pray a blessing over them. In your workplace, who is the person that nobody else likes because they're horrible, irritating, for whatever reason? They're the enemy in the room. We don't empty ourselves and become like Jesus. We find it really hard. And the real reason I put this letter here is because when I was 17, I think I was 17 at the time, I went on a rugby tour with my school. I was in the first 11, first 15, first 15, there you go. Counting, remembering how many people play rugby. And we went on a rugby tour to Amsterdam. I can't believe that got through the governing board. Anyway, so this rugby tour, these 17 and 18 year olds went to Amsterdam to play rugby, and at the end of one of these games, we played against the university team, and they thrashed us, and then they invited us back to their, I don't know really what to call it, it was more than a clubhouse, and it had this amazing old fireplace, really high fireplace, and at the end they'd given us all Heineken beer, as you can imagine. And well, actually, I can't remember now, actually, but beer. And then we were beginning to enjoy each other's company. And then the captain of the team got up, of their team, got up onto the top of this mantelpiece. Now you're worried, aren't you? I'm worried, actually. So he got up onto the top, and he said, who will catch me? Diane, would you come and help me? No, Diane. And who will catch me? And he said, I want to call all those from the school to come and catch me. He got them all down. He got us all down. So we all stood at the bottom of the ladder. I couldn't believe that this guy was standing on top of this mantelpiece. And we all stood there. I mean, literally, he was definitely as high as this, if not higher, because the mantelpiece was huge. And he said, I want you to catch me. It's going to be okay. You'll catch me, won't you? He just thrashed us at rugby. And after three, one, two, three, he threw himself off. And we dropped him. No, we didn't. We caught him. And he said, this is our tradition at the end of every game, is to throw ourselves off into the arms of the enemy. And so he, one by one, they all got up, including we dropped forward. That was a challenge. And one by one, we caught them all. And then he said, and I invite you to do the same. So one by one, we all got on top of the mantelpiece and took ourselves to the top of this mantelpiece and threw ourselves off into the arms of the enemy. And one by one, they caught us. And it stuck with me. It was such a brilliant experience. I can't remember anything else about the rugby, to be honest. That's all I remember about that trip. But when I became a curate, I was a curate in Southfields. And Southfields, just at the time that we arrived in Southfields, loads of South Africans, young South Africans, were coming to Southfields and living and moving in Southfields. And I don't know if you know, South Africans, they like to play rugby, don't they? Did anyone watch it yesterday? Any South Africans in the room? No, you're probably not here. No, I can imagine.
So they came and they loved the rugby, and I was trying to explain a truth about trusting Jesus, because Jesus says, would you trust me with your life? And I remembered this story, and I thought, well, it's a rugby story, so I'll tell the story, and I'll get to the top of the thing, and I said, sure, how about we reenact that story now? So I got to the top, and I got these young South African rugby player types at the bottom, and I said, I'm going to throw myself off into your arms. Would you catch me? And so they all came forward, and the strong ones and the smaller ones too, and I launched myself off in front of everyone, and they caught me again. As a sign of kind of what it is to trust someone. Because you wouldn't do that, would you, if you didn't trust that they would catch you? So then, and then a few years later, I was not in South Azimor. I was now in Twerton, the state on the edge of Perth. And I was doing an end-of-term assembly, and I really hadn't prepared very well. And I couldn't think. I was on the way. I was a bit last minute, trying to think, what do I say to send them off? And I saw a stepladder at the front of church. And I remember this experience, and I thought, that would be great. Let's do that story. So I did that story, and I got to the front, and I said, now, who will catch me? How about the teachers come out and catch me? So I went to the top of the ladder once again, and I got the primary school teachers to come stand with their arms open. Note to self, female primary school teachers are not quite the same as young South African men. But I wasn't thinking straight, and this was the only illustration I had. So I stood there, and I got the whole school to count from 10. Never have they been more excited. 10, 9, 8. The police was absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy. And when we got to 0, I launched myself off, threw myself off into the arms of the primary school teacher, saying, God will never let you down. I think you're thinking, what happened? I threw myself off. I mean, I learned that this works. Prop forwards can do this and survive. So I threw myself off. I didn't just throw myself off, I dived! I threw myself off and I went straight through the arms of these pathetic primary school teachers. And my head crashed on the ground. I had a carpet burn down the side of my face. Half of my face was left on the carpet. My back has never been the same since. And I had to get up and think of something to say. God will never let you down, had been my last words. This will demonstrate it for you all. Ah, we're primary school teachers, may. But God will never let you down. Now, the truth is, I think Jesus, see, after that experience, I've not jumped off ladders. Tori, I don't know if Tori, to me sitting over there, my wife, is a bit worried to see the ladder. Because she said, you're never going to do that again. And I wonder if that's what it's like for all of us. After a while, that we hear these words of Jesus, but we never throw ourselves off. We never actually put him to the test. We never empty ourselves and throw ourselves off. The story, the incredible story of Jesus, is that even when he was standing on the cross, he said, Father, forgive them. Even as he was experiencing all of that pain, his heart was for blessing those who were hurting him. Brothers and sisters, we have a choice about whether we want to be like Jesus and whether we want to do the things that Jesus did. So really my invitation for you this week is whether you'll jump off a ladder Would anyone like me to jump off now?
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to. But I'm going to leave you with this thought. What stops you trusting Jesus? What stops you jumping off and actually following him, what he said to do? If you want to be like me, give yourself away. Not just to your neighbor. Everybody loves their neighbor. But give yourself away even to your enemy. Amen.